And I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 25th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Ballot Issue for Central Precinct is Fixed," by Stuart Doreen. There is no longer an issue with ballots for people in a central Midland precinct, according to the Midland County Elections Office. The county stated Monday afternoon that a vendor error, quote, has been fixed, unquote, and paper ballots won't be needed for voters from Precinct 402. The problem lasted less than a day, but got people's attention as certain ballots did not have the Midland ISD District 6 race between Carrie McNeil and Sarah Burleson. After speaking with the vendor, the issue was fixed around 1:30 to 2 p.m. Monday, Midland County spokesperson Tate Owen stated in an email. We wanted to wait until a representative from the Midland County Elections Office went to all locations and confirmed that they are good to go before letting everyone know. Paper ballots will no longer need to be used for Precinct 402 voters. Earlier in the day, the Midland County Elections Office reported that, quote, we realized this morning that our vendor had transposed the splits in Precinct 402, unquote. Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves told the Reporter Telegram that Precinct 402 has 357 voters. We caught it early and are sending paper ballots to all locations, Graves said Monday morning. Voters would be given a paper ballot, which elections office personnel would run through their tabulator just like any other vote, Graves added. Precinct 402 appears to be an area of central Midland that is bordered by Garfield Street to the east, Midkiff Road to the west, Golf Course Road to the north, and Cuthbert Avenue to the south. Those who voted in Precinct 402 on Monday before the ultimate fix took place should contact the Midland County Elections Office with any questions. This was the second ballot issue during this election cycle. Earlier, the Reporter Telegram reported about a defective ballot issue with some mail-in ballots. Graves said previously that the problem with defective mail-in ballots will not keep any votes from being counted. She also said those 1,200 people who received the first wave of ballots from the elections office will receive a second ballot to fill out and return. Graves said that only one ballot will be counted for each voter, as the Midland County Elections Office will be using a tracker system. This article is entitled, Midland Dems Support O'Rourke. They talk about key issues driving them to vote. By Ben Schaffer. Midland Democrats shared their thoughts on the upcoming state elections, for which early voting began Monday. Abortion, education, and environmental regulation are the key issues for local Democrats. Despite recent polls showing Republican leads in state elections, Democrats remain optimistic about November 8th. Kathy Broderick, Midland Democratic Party chair, said O'Rourke is a great person with positive plans for the state. Broderick, who spent 20 years in law enforcement and served as a former court-appointed special advocate, said abortion rights were an important issue for her in this election cycle. My granddaughters are going to live in a world where they have less freedoms than me, and that is not acceptable to me. That's not going to be acceptable to women, she said. Broderick added, they can say all they want about the polls, and said women don't talk to pollsters, but they show up on election day. John Love III, a Democrat running against U.S. Senator Ted Cruz in 2024, said he's beyond optimistic about the gubernatorial race. I think the people are tired of hypocrisy. I think the people are tired of someone not representing them and their will, Love said about Governor Greg Abbott. All of them, everything is important, Love said about the key issues heading into November 8th. Voting rights, LGBTQ rights, women's rights, and sensible environmental regulation were a few examples he gave. Look, nobody's trying to put anybody out of work or get rid of jobs, Love said. He claimed the state can successfully transform the economy from fossil-based to renewable source-based. Trist Spate, a local Democrat, said a lot has changed since 2018 when O'Rourke ran for senator, a race he only lost by around 2.5% of the vote. "I feel good about it," she said about the state elections. "My main issue is education. That means a lot to me. I like all his ideas," she remarked about O'Rourke's stance on education. This article is entitled, "Median Price of Midland Homes Drops by $30,000. Number of Homes Sold Also Declines," by Stuart Doreen. The Midland housing market hit a speed bump in September, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. Texas A&M reported that the median price for a home sold inside Midland County, $310,000, dropped by $30,000 compared to the month of August. The median price and average price, $376,924, also fell slightly compared to September 2021. At the same time, the number of homes sold fell to 250 from 265 in August and 267 in September 2021. And the number of homes available at the end of the month jumped 10% to 738, the largest number of total listings since January 2021. There are 2.9 months of inventory in Midland, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. People still need a nice place to live, and sellers still need to sell. So it makes sense that prices would decline and that inventory would stay on the market longer, said Victoria Prince, who has returned to Midland and started Victoria Prince & Company. Prince said that rising interest rates are having a definite impact on house payment amounts, and that is impacting the market, as many expected. In looking at the number, the prices still appear to favor the seller. September was the 49th straight month that the average price for a home sold in Midland County topped $300,000, a streak that goes back to September 2018. The $376,924 also was one of the highest averages reported in Midland County history. Also, September was the 16th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. September did mark the first time in 7 months that the median price for a home sold failed to reach $320,000, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. In Odessa, the median price for a home sold actually increased $1,000 to $261,000, while the number of homes sold also increased compared to August and September 2021. Texas A&M reported 3.6 months of inventory in Ector County. This section is called Midland County Early Voting Locations for November 8th Election. Source, Midland County Elections Office. Midland County Elections Office, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th, and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 31st to November 4th. Centennial Library Meeting Room Number 113, 2503 West Loop 250 North, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th, and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 31st to November 4th. Cogdell Learning Center, Classroom Number 4, 201 West Florida Avenue, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 31st to November 4th. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3813 North Midland Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 31st to November 4th. St. Paul United Methodist Church, Abundant Life Center, 4501 Thomason Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 29th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. October 30th, and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 31st to November 4th. This article is entitled "Woman Arrested on Charges of Stalking Obstruction" by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland woman was arrested Saturday after harassing family members of a Midland Police Department officer who had arrested her previously, according to court documents. Ashley Auberg, 40, was being held in Midland County Jail on Monday on stalking and obstruction retaliation charges, both third-degree felonies. On Saturday, an MPD officer was advised over the radio that her family was being harassed at Target by a woman, later identified as Auberg. The victim told officers they were inside the store when Auberg approached them and asked them a series of questions pertaining to the officer, according to the arrest affidavit. The victims recognized Auberg because she lives across from a family member. According to the arrest affidavit, Auberg was upset because the victim's family member, an MPD officer, had arrested her. The officer told the investigating MPD officer that on October 2nd, Auberg had approached a family member's house with a taser in her hand, according to the arrest affidavit. While reading her Miranda rights, Auberg said she, quote, didn't understand and had amnesia, unquote, according to the arrest affidavit. Auberg was being held on a total bond of $25,000. This article is entitled "Affidavit: Man Charged with Aggravated Assault" by Mercedes Cordero. A 44-year-old man was arrested Friday after using a gun during the commission of an assault, according to court documents. Jose Gabriel Torres Compian was being held in Midland County Jail on Monday on an aggravated assault charge with a deadly weapon charge, a second-degree felony, and evading arrest detention with a vehicle, a third-degree felony. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched Friday at about 11:30 p.m. to an apartment complex in West Midland in reference to check welfare call. Dispatch advised that a woman, later identified as the victim, had been picked up from the CVS on Briarwood by an intoxicated man, identified as Torres Compian, in a red truck. Dispatch also advised that a gunshot had been fired in the CVS parking lot when Torres Compian picked up the victim. The victim told officers that Torres Compian, who she had not seen in several months, had shown up at her workplace at about 11 p.m. and told her he wanted to talk to her. The victim told Torres Compian they could talk outside, where she knew there were cameras to record the interaction, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim advised Torres Compian appeared to be intoxicated and was making comments about shooting a gun. The victim stated Torres Compian wanted to take her home, but she still had things to do at work. Torres Compian told the victim to touch his side where the victim felt a gun tucked into his waistband, according to the arrest affidavit. Torres Compian then told her if, quote, she was afraid that this was her last day, quote, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim, fearing for her life, grabbed the gun and began struggling with Torres Compian to control the gun. During the struggle, the gun went off, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim then went back into the store, and Torres Compian followed her and started yelling, quote, that if she did not go with him, he was going to shoot up the store, unquote, according to the arrest affidavit. Before leaving with Torres Compian, the victim called a friend and advised that Torres Compian had taken her and to call the police, according to the arrest affidavit. MPD officers found the Torres Compian's red truck in the victim's apartment lot. While attempting to approach the truck, Torres Campion continued to drive through the parking lot. When Torres Campion came to a stop, MPD officers initiated a high-risk stop where the victim was able to exit the vehicle. Torres Campion was being held on a combined bond of $85,000. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Texas Natural Gas Drops Towards Zero as Output Swamps Pipelines, by Sergio Chapa, Gerson Freitas Jr., and Joe Carroll, Bloomberg. Natural gas prices in the Permian Basin of West Texas are plunging towards zero as booming production overwhelms pipeline networks, creating a regional glut of the fuel. Gas in an area of the vast Permian known as Waha was trading for as little as 20 cents to 70 cents per million British thermal units on Monday, traders said. That compares with the U.S. benchmark futures contract that's trading around $5, and European prices close to $28. If West Texas prices tumble into negative territory, energy producers will effectively be paying someone to take gas off their hands, something that hasn't happened in 2 years. The price collapse illustrates the sharp contrast between bountiful U.S. supplies of the fuel and Europe's worsening energy crisis as winter approaches. Tight gas markets in Europe and Asia threaten to have knock-on effects for diesel, coal, and power as governments and utilities scramble for energy, according to Bloomberg Intelligence. The Texas price plunge stems from maintenance scheduled for Kinder Morgan Inc.'s Gulf Coast Express and El Paso Natural Gas Pipeline systems. Insufficient pipeline capacity has actually been a long-term problem that has dogged Permian Basin gas producers for years. The choke points worsen when pipeline operators must perform repairs and preventative maintenance work that forces temporary reduction in pressure or halts to shipping. Permian pipeline constraints have never been relieved, making the region more susceptible to sudden gluts and price volatility, said Campbell Faulkner, chief data analyst at OTC Global Holdings LP. An early October disruption in polar vortex formation, making it more elongated, is channeling colder air toward the upper northern hemisphere, including the U.S., Canada, Europe, and China, as Severe Weather Europe suggests, said Henik Fung and Chiao Chang Chen, Bloomberg Intelligence analysts. That could raise the specter of energy shortages as heating needs spike, stoking strong demand for natural gas, coal, and oil products. Waha gas went negative 8 times in 2020 and more than 24 times in 2019, data compiled by Bloomberg shows. This article is entitled, Schlumberger Rebrands to SLB in Focus on Clean Technology Shift, by David Weth and Alex Steele, Bloomberg. Schlumberger, the world's biggest oilfield services provider, changed its name to SLB and rebranded itself as a technology company to go after more work in the clean energy space. The Houston and Paris-based company plans to continue operating its legacy oil and gas business while expanding in technologies that will help companies curb emissions of carbon dioxide and methane. The new name, the same as the company's stock ticker symbol, took effect Monday. We couldn't have done it at a better time at a critical juncture in our industry, Chief Executive Officer Olivier Lepeuc said in a Bloomberg television interview. Digital is the future of this industry. The rebranding of SLB, which traces its history back almost a century, follows similar moves by other oil and gas industry giants to reflect a global push toward clean energy sources. France's Total became Total Energies SE in the last year, while Norway's Statoil dropped the fossil fuel reference from its name entirely in 2018 to be rechristened as Equinor SA. Despite the focus on climate change, fossil fuel prices have surged this year, in large part due to the war in Ukraine. That's thrown up the best opportunity in years for the world's biggest oil field contractors to cash in on an expansion in drilling, even as they try to capture business outside of what has traditionally been their core expertise. SLB on Friday posted its highest third-quarter profit in 7 years, thanks to rising drilling activity in markets outside the U.S. and Canada. The Digital and Integration Unit, the smallest of its four businesses, and the centerpiece of SLB's effort to pivot toward the energy transition, posted $900 million in quarterly sales, trailing analysts' expectations. SLB's renaming also follows a recent pattern established by U.S. energy companies APA and NOV, which both took their new monikers from their stock ticker symbols. One issue this election cycle has been the $55 million Hogan Park transformation. Morales has repeatedly made comments about transparency with the park. Even in the Reporter-Telegram debate, there was a back and forth between the candidates on Hogan Park. However, the strongest statement about what we haven't confirmed about the Hogan Park project, the conservancy and tens of millions of dollars in potential city commitments, came this weekend when at-large councilwoman Robin Poole wrote an opinion article for the Reporter-Telegram about the project and what wasn't known. Councilwoman Lori Blong immediately said she was running and showed she had considerable backing. It looked as though she might not have an opponent, but then former Mayor Jerry Morales and Robert Allen Dixon entered the race, a coronation turned in an honest-to-goodness political race. The preference here is for competitive elections. One reason is we get to talk about issues that otherwise might not be brought up. She mentioned the city's current $10 million commitment, the possible contract of 25 years, followed by a pair of 20-year renewals. She confirmed what the Reporter-Telegram stated Thursday during the mayor's forum, that the city has been asked to contribute $2 million a year to go toward the maintenance and operations of the park. Those commitments add up to $60 million for 25 years and $140 million over 65 years. She then threw in, quote, an escalator built in based on the Consumer Price Index, CPI, which would, in the long term, drive that number closer to $90 million for the first 25 years and $550 million for the entire 65 years, unquote. Whoa! She stated, what we have heard before, that private-public partnerships allow Midland to do things that otherwise weren't possible. We have seen that work at Centennial Park downtown. Generally, there is a lot to like about those partnerships. That isn't for debate in this space. What is for debate here and in this community moving forward will be the possible commitment. Project supporters are likely going to say that donations currently being made are because of the conservancy model and because of the potential for what Hogan Park could turn into. They are likely going to turn to their own studies, including one from the Perryman Group, about the potential revenue generated from a park with more options for sports tourism. I get it. This newspaper will allow both sides to do exactly what Councilwoman Poole did, and that is communicate about this project to the Reporter-Telegram readers. The people from the Hogan Park project have communicated in the past, but obviously there is more work to be done. Hogan Park, at this point, should be celebrated, not be a number one issue in the mayoral race. But it is. For the record, here are my concerns. The argument for the investment for tens of millions of taxpayer dollars, if not more, that will center around a sports tourism model is flawed. Hogan Park, as nice as it will not be the sports park that is seen elsewhere, like the Metroplex. The former sports writer in me will wonder if sports tourism can't be accomplished better, if sports tourism is the goal, by investing dollars into Beale Park as a soccer complex. West Midland is where the hotels are. If the data really tells us sports tourism will bring people here for baseball, then, yes, put money into baseball upgrades at either Beale Park, Hogan Park, or Windlands. It's also important to be realistic about what comes here. I was a sports writer covering the Amateur Softball Association girls' fast-pitch national tournaments, the Cadillac of sports tourism events, in the late 1990s, and it is hard to envision a weekend tournament measuring up. I expect the numbers would tell us adult slow-pitch softball tournaments are as good as we could do at Hogan Park. But we already have the type of slow-pitch softball events that we are going to get there anyway. People are correct to ask about what the tens of billions are really going to get Midland. Please provide more information on how the study comes to its ultimate conclusion. Whether it is Perryman or someone else, the concern will be that you can make a study say whatever you want. I think there are still people who were frustrated with the population report used by numerous entities, even prior to COVID, that allegedly was using flawed data about the number of people we needed here to make the regional economic engine go. Specificity isn't an unreasonable request. Please provide a greater list of what operations and maintenance will cover. My worry is that in the effort to turf more and more of Midland, we forget that turf will need to be replaced, and the sheer amount will break budgets. We sometimes forget that half of Centennial Park operations are being paid for by downtown building owners, and the Scarborough Sports Complex had tens of millions in the bank to cover operations, maintenance, and expansion when the 4B tax ended. I can go on, like the optics of a park of that stature being located next to a juvenile detention center. But I am guessing we have enough to work on at this point. There are going to be people who say Poole's article, or this column, is standing in the way of progress. Actually, I hope they showed us there might be a better way. In the end, we have to seek the most bang for the buck when it comes to our limited resources. And yes, even in oil-laden Midland, there are finite resources. Let's also know that if the project is worth doing, that the conversations taking place and the answers provided will just confirm it, and that the best outcome for the community, one way or another, should be the goal for all involved. This is also the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Democrats Represent the People of Texas, by Kathy Broderick, guest columnist. I often hear voters say they are sick of political division growing in America. They ask, how do we fix this? I continue to have many Republican friends. Many want Republicans to take their party back from leaders with radical positions. Governor Greg Abbott admitted in the debate against Beto O'Rourke that his abortion ban with no exceptions was based on his personal religious views, citing the adoption of his daughter having sway in his position. Whether any of our daughters or granddaughters might need an abortion in the future was outweighed by his own religious belief. That is not separation of church and state. That is a radical position reflective of only 20% of Texans. The result? Texans no longer get to determine the size of their family. Greg does. Dan Patrick clearly valued business over our grandparents during COVID-19. The mantra of the party became freedom to not wear a mask or get a vaccine. Freedom was far more important than the many lives lost during the pandemic. The result? The COVID-19 death rate was higher in Trump-voting states and counties versus Biden-voting areas. Ken Paxton filed an embarrassing lawsuit to support Trump's unsubstantiated claims of election fraud. The whole party supported new laws that have not made our election systems more secure. The result? It is harder to vote for some, and harder for both party chairs and the election office staff to do their job effectively. The corruption by the above candidates, plus the agriculture commissioner, railroad commissioner, and land commissioner, should be enough that we remove them from office. No energy company should be able to buy politicians. The amount of money going to these Republican candidates from Midland's wealthy donors is staggering. All energy users pay the price. Their record-making profits don't trickle down to workers. These local oil executives' owners are getting filthy rich. The result? Our energy grid is not fixed. Local politicians tout slogans like, "Don't California my Texas," when our property taxes and sales taxes for lower to middle class voters are higher than California. The wealthy get all the tax breaks in Texas. I don't understand why the savvy Republicans of Midland would continue to support Trump as their party leader after he clearly tried to overthrow our system of free and fair elections. Many of you don't want Trump back in, but will still support Abbott, Patrick, Paxton, etc., when they clearly support Trump's radical, authoritarian methods of governing. Democrats will represent the people of Texas. Kathy Broderick is the Democratic Party chair for Midland County. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, October 25th. Bill E. Giles. Bill E. Giles, our precious husband, daddy, granddaddy, and great-granddaddy, passed from this life on September 23rd. Bill was born in Coushatta, Louisiana, on March 30, 1937, to Earl Ellington and Bessie Mae Smith Giles. He married his bride and love of his life, Terry, on October 31, 1981, in Midland. He was blessed with six children, Kayla Schmidt, Jay Giles, Laurie, Jason Giles, Clint Bradbury, Corey St. Aubin, Dee, Nikki Janik, Tommy. He was also blessed with eight beautiful grandchildren and one great-grandson. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to a charity of your choice. Jean Guichard. Jean Vincenti Guichard, age 98, passed away October 11th at Whitman Place in Walla Walla, Washington. Jean was born in 1924 in Pasadena, California. Jean is survived by her sons, David, Kathleen, and Kent Teresa Guichard, daughters Julia Guichard, Sterling Shelton, and Rachel Tandy Bryan, seven grandchildren and eight great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, Douglas Guichard, parents Guido and Agnese Vincenti, brothers Paul, Louis, and Walter Vincenti, sister Nataline Vincenti Scott. Those who desire may make memorial donations in Jean's name to the Recording Library of West Texas or Walla Walla Community Hospice. Martin Franco Munoz. Martin Franco Munoz, 67, of Midland, passed away on October 22nd. Rosary will be held on Tuesday, October 25th at 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held on Wednesday, October 26th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Martin was born on April 11, 1955, to Otilia and Maximo Munoz in Midland. He is survived by his wife of 39 years, Lily Munoz of Midland, sons Jerry Dutchover and wife Angel of Midland, Martin Munoz of Abilene, Ricky Munoz and wife Crystal of Andrews, and daughters Cindy Adams and husband Sean of Midland, Naomi Garcia and husband Usbaldo of South Dakota, Monica Munoz Elizondo and husband Hector of Stanton, and Popo's Boo. Destiny Rachel Cortez of Midland. He is also survived by his brothers Maximo, Jesse Munoz, and wife Karina of Bastrop, Mickey Munoz and wife Angie of Odessa, Max Munoz and wife Dorothy of Midland, sisters Tina Mendoza of Florida, Ellen Fino of Midland, Fanny Snodgrass of Midland, and Lucy Fino and husband Paul of Midland. Popo had 35 lovely grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents Maximo and Otilia Munoz, brother Fred Munoz, and grandson Ricardo Ricky Munoz. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Michaela Mickey Flores Navarro. Michaela Mickey Flores Navarro of Midland was called home by our Savior on October 20th. Michaela was born September 29, 1930, in Paint Rock, Texas, to Feliciano and Manuel Flores. She is survived by her son, Romaldo Ray Navarro, Jr., and wife Margie of Midland, daughters Lucy Lulu Navarro, Nancy Navarro Aguirre and husband Ronnie, and Cindy Megan Navarro, all of Midland, Elizabeth Ann Navarro of Odessa, 6 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her beloved husband of 68 years, Romaldo Navarro, newborn daughter Elizabeth Navarro, parents Feliciana and Manuel Flores, brother Jose Flores, sisters Virginia Navarro and Sinovio Torres. Viewing for Michaela will be Thursday, October 27th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Celebration of life service will begin at 7 p.m. Thursday, October 27th. Funeral services will also be held there Friday, October 28th at 1 p.m. Services will be officiated by Reverend Martin Ortega. Burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Sharon Janet Sanders. Sharon Janet Sanders passed away peacefully on October 15th after a short battle with cancer. Sharon was born December 13, 1951 in Austin to Mutt and Margie Sanders. She was raised by Glenn and Eunice Garrison in Odessa. Sharon is preceded in death by her parents, Mutt and Margie Sanders, and Glenn and Eunice Garrison, her brothers Richard Nickens and Delbert Evans, son Travis Schellenberger, along with her great-grandson Caden Garay. She leaves to cherish her memories, her daughter Margie Barnes and husband Dwayne Barnes, her son Roy Gatlin and wife Shannon Gatlin, her sons Sam and Seth Schellenberger, as well as 17 beloved grandchildren, 30 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren, as well as her sisters Macy Garrison and Della Burrow. Visitation was held on Sunday, October 23rd, from 2 to 9 p.m., Monday, October 24th, from 8 to 9 a.m., with family present to receive visitors at 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. A celebration of her life will be held at Acres West Funeral Chapel on Tuesday, October 25th at 1 p.m., with burial to follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death Notices. Carlos Alfonso Valdez. Carlos Alfonso Valdez, 52, of Midland, passed away on October 22nd. Viewing will be Tuesday, October 25th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, October 26th, at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. John Gerardo Ceniceros. John Gerardo Ceniceros, 50, passed away on October 20th in Dallas. family will receive friends Monday, October 24th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Karen Newby Bass. Karen Newby Bass, 75, of Midland, passed away October 24th. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, October 27th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Peggy Lou Strong. Peggy Lou Strong, 70, of Midland, passed away October 22nd. Graveside service will be held on Friday, October 28th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Susan M. Walsh. Susan M. Walsh, 73, of Stanton, passed away October 23rd. There will be no service. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 25th. Community kicks off Red Ribbon Week with the Permian High School Drumline and Panther Paws providing extra oomph. Red Ribbon Week kicked off Monday in the Ector County ISD parking lot. This year's theme is Celebrate Life, Live Drug-Free. Red Ribbon Week runs through October 31st. Superintendent Scott Murray, Mayor Javier Hoven, Assistant ECISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels, and representatives from the Permian Basin Permian Regional Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse spoke. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce ambassadors cut a red ribbon marking the week. Red Ribbon Week began in 1985 as a way to honor the memory of DEA agent Kiki Camarena, who was kidnapped, tortured, and killed by drug traffickers. A bust of Camarena was placed near the podium where people spoke. Drug abuse is common in our community, common in our state and our nation. Not only does it create the death of an individual life, but it also creates the death of family, the death of friendships and relationships. Today we honor a healthy life, a clean life, a pure life. That is our opportunity today, Murray said. Hoven said the community struggles with illicit drug use. It's something that doesn't just permeate in our youth, but something that also permeates within our society, Hoven said. He added that you can try to address the drug issue with Just Say No and other initiatives, but when he worked for the Bureau of Prisons, 99.9% of the cases he handled were drug use or distribution of drugs. I've been in this battlefield for a long, long, long time, and the thing that I realized is how we're going to be able to get through this is by being involved at a personal level and prepared, Hoven said. He then read Red Ribbon Proclamation from the City of Odessa. Daniels read a brief biography of Camarena. Daniels said Camarena wanted to make a difference from an early age. After earning a college degree in criminal justice, he served as a U.S. Marine and a police officer. He then joined the DEA. In 1985, while working undercover in Mexico, Camarena was kidnapped and killed by drug traffickers. The 37-year-old special agent was survived by his wife and three children. Responding to the murder and the horrific effects of drug on our society, citizens of Camarena's hometown of Calexico, California, began wearing red ribbons. The trend took hold throughout the country, and in 1988, Congress officially proclaimed the last week of October as Red Ribbon Week. Now every October, American children, parents, and educators unite to take a stand for a drug-free land, Daniels said. Diana White, Impact Youth Program Director with Permian Basin Regional Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, said they are passionate about educating young people, parents, and the community. White said they will be doing presentations in elementary and middle schools and some high schools this week. We're also very excited to provide any type of resources that parents or educators may need, White said. White said they would cover refusal strategies when it comes to peer pressure in regard to alcohol, tobacco, and drugs. They will also offer alternative activities such as pledging to live a healthy drug-free life. We'll have a banner set up where we'll sign it. We may also do some activities where we are showing the effects of somebody that uses cigarettes or tobacco. So we'll do different types of activities that are meant to show how the lungs react when somebody uses tobacco, White said. White said the community has been hit by the fentanyl crisis and a lot of young people have been lost even on campuses. We're very much aware of that. We're trying to get out there and promote the word, especially during Halloween, that there are confiscating drugs at the border that look like candy. We just want parents to be aware, not only right now because of Halloween, but to check that Halloween candy, but just to be aware if they see something in their child's room, or you're a teacher, you see something that may or may not be candy, White said. She said a lot of young people are obtaining the drug from social media sites. They can get on something like Snapchat or Instagram and just search up their local drug dealer, and that's how they're getting it, White said. A lot of them are also being mixed with other drugs. A lot of these young people, they don't know what's in there to begin with, White added. Melissa Brenham, director of the Prevention of Resource Center, said the young people are getting fentanyl, but they're not asking for it. Children think they're getting Xanax, or they think they're getting something else, but it's actually laced with fentanyl, and like white sand, just a sprinkle of it can kill, Brenham said. She added that there is a local parent group advocating for awareness because they've lost their children to fentanyl. We're asking parents to be vigilant about that, Brenham added. The DEA has a campaign called One Pill Can Kill with lots of information. Brenham said young people will buy $50 to $60 a pill. Brenham noted that the youngsters think they're getting Xanax, Adderall, or some other type of prescription drug, and they're getting counterfeit medication. They call it like Russian roulette with a pill because you just don't know, Brenham said. She added that drug addicts are getting it, too, as part of their cocaine or heroin. If anything, that's what we'd like the message to be. Check everything and just be careful, Brenham said. ConActor Task Force to ask county for $1.2 million. Funds will help expand broadband to residents in Ector County. About a month ago, Ector County Independent School District Superintendent Scott Murray gave a presentation about the ConActor Task Force regarding state funding options to expand broadband to residents in Ector County to the Ector County Commissioner's Court. Murray said during a phone call on Monday afternoon that he will give the second part of the presentation that will also include a funding request of $1.2 million over a 3-year period of time to come from the county's ARPA funds. The presentation from the ConActor Task Force is the first agenda item scheduled to be heard at 10 a.m. today, Tuesday, at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in Room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. This is to help bring high-speed, affordable broadband to every resident in our community, Murray said over the phone on Monday afternoon. This request is part of the program. The Odessa American previously reported on September 27th that Murray said the project is estimated at $90 million. Murray said that 25% of the cost would have to come from the community, while the other 25% would be paid by the federal government. Murray reconfirmed that number on Monday and said the funds that ConActor Task Force will request on Tuesday will fund a local broadband office. In that article, Murray told commissioners he also asked for funds from the city of Odessa, and he said he also received philanthropist interest, called it a grassroots effort. During Monday's phone call, Murray explained the focus for the ConEchter Task Force was shifted to Ector County outside city limits. We haven't received any funding right now, but we haven't had special asks, Murray said. Our focus is upon city and county government entities. Before we venture to our nonprofit and philanthropic communities, we are going to secure funding from our governmental entities. Murray said there was a study performed early in the 2020 pandemic that showed 39% of Ector County ISD families had zero internet access or the access was inadequate for what the students needed, low speed or low quality in their home. Since that study, Murray said, additional studies have been completed, including those that can tell the ConEchter Task Force what providers and what speeds every resident in Ector County can receive. There are a variety of nonprofit organizations that have looked at internet availability in communities across the state of Texas and around the nation, Murray said. We have a few more sophisticated studies today. It helps us understand the true need that exists in our community, and it's pretty significant outside of the city limits. The city of Odessa families do have access to high-speed broadband, but it's not always affordable. That's something in the city limits that we have to work on. But outside the city limits, not only is it not affordable, but many times it's not high speed, or if you do have the opportunity to purchase the high speed, the cost is exorbitant. The county will also accept a $250 donation from Randy and Grassic Galindo for the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on the missing assets and the disposal list from the 2022 fixed asset inventory. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the disposal of obsolete office supply items in the purchasing supply room through the auction process. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the following bid: Fire Extinguisher Services, bid number 22112301, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the scheduled expiration of the FBO lease agreement that expires September 30th, 2024, and vote to terminate the agreement effective that day per recommendation from the Airport Advisory Board. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the approval of an inter-local cooperation agreement between Brewster County and Ector County for the emergency housing and care of Ector County inmates. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the rental agreement with Odessa College for the Employee Service Awards Luncheon and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the First Amendment to the Medical Services Agreement between Care Here Management, PLLC, and Ector County, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request for the Director of Nurses to be able to receive overtime. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request to hire 2 health inspectors, sanitarian, non-licensed, at a Step 3 due to experience. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a request to hire a public health nurse, LVN, at a Step 1 to Step 3 due to experience. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the summary of benefits provided by Aetna for eligible Ector County retired employees and their dependents aged 65 and over beginning January 1, 2023. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a proposed MHRC development, Riojas Mobile Home and Recreational Vehicle Park, 3757 North Tripp Avenue, Odessa, Texas, 79764, Precinct 1, Riojas, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a correction plat of Texas Properties subdivision being a 19.378-acre tract as described in document number 2020-21755 OPREC, located in Section 5, Block 1, T1S, TNP, RR County, Survey Precinct 2, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on Basin Industrial Addition 3rd filing being a plat of a 10.551-acre tract located in Section 46, Block 44, T2S, TNP, RY, Precinct 1, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on High Performance West I-20 South Subdivision, second filing being a plat of a 35.323-acre tract, being all of the south half of Section 48, lying north of Interstate Highway 20's right-of-way, Block 44, T2S, TNP, RR County Survey, Precinct 1, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on a correction plat, Pura Vida Estates, being a 63.36-acre tract located in Section 5, Block 41, T1S, TNP, A51, Co., Survey Precinct 2, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, and approve a TY 2023 budget amendment to General Fund, Senior Citizen Center, Special Department Equipment, 001-630-5507 from Unreserved Fund Balance, 001-3310-4500. Consider and approve the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report for October 25th, 2023, to review county financial statements and reports.